We're grateful for the opportunity to hear from a guest today. Alan Thornton is with us, who is the CEO of The Rescue Mission. And more than 20 years ago, I met Alan as he and I started at The Rescue Mission right around the same summer. I worked there for a short time, and Alan sold his soul to The Rescue Mission. And we have seen God raise him up as a entry-level employee all the way up to this new greater capacity of the CEO. And we are so thrilled that we get the opportunity to support them as a partner in our community who's on the front lines of intervening and bringing hope to those who are in distress, facing hunger, homelessness, and other kinds of distress in their lives. And today I'm hoping that God stirs you to be a part of what he's doing to help bring hope to people in our own community who oftentimes they are faltering with hopelessness. So would you welcome with us here today to share with our church family, Alan Thornton from The Rescue Mission.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for having me here today. Absolute pleasure. And I have to tell you, just to be brutally honest, somewhat rare that a pastor will trust somebody to come up here, especially that they knew 20 years ago, and not say bad things about them. But to give a whole message time for us to be able to share, I can't thank Dan enough, and thank you all for welcoming us so graciously here today. I'm here with Elaine. So after the service, if you have questions more about The Rescue Mission, Elaine and I will be hanging out in the back. Before we get started, though, I wanted to kind of kick things off with a little humor. You know, it's political season. We've got tons of people running for president. A lot of nasty ads already and debate time and all that fun stuff. So I thought, what better way to start off than just a reminder that our elected officials and our president, they're human too, right? And so if you would direct your attention to the screen, we'll kind of open things up.
Online, the people who already don't like the president are criticizing him for coming here. President Bush would get the same thing when he did TV shows. It's the nature of the job, I guess, especially now that we have Twitter. But I think it's important to remember that presidents are people, too. And from time to time, we give celebrities a chance to read some of the mean things people tweet about them. And tonight, we extended that same courtesy to our commander-in-chief. And with that said, it's time now for an all-President Obama edition of Mean Tweets.
Obama's hair is looking grayer these days. Can't imagine why, since he doesn't seem to be one bit worried about all that's going on. Is there any way we could fly Obama to some golf course halfway around the world and just leave him there? Well, RW is Surfer Girl. I think that's a great idea. A 30 rack of Coors Light is $23 now at Sun Stop. Thanks, Obama. How do you make Obama's eyes light up? Shine a flashlight in his ears. That's pretty good. Somebody send Obama some life hacks on how to be a good president. Ha ha. Like, I bet that would help. LOL. You know, the LOL is redundant when you have the ha ha. I'm all right with the president wearing jeans. I'm not all right with the president wearing those jeans.
Can I just say something?
Yeah,
I think that's mean, and I don't think there's anything wrong with the jeans you wear.
Jimmy, I think they've got a point. Have you been working out?
And in the spirit of kind of the mean tweet video thing, I thought I would introduce you to one other video kind of along the same theme.
I hate the homeless. I don't feel sorry for you. If you want change, let me throw it at you as hard as I can
at your dirty face.
I hate when it gets cold out because then all the homeless people get on the bus.
I wonder if homeless people go to heaven.
Maybe if homeless people took care of themselves, looked pretty, we would want to help them. But I don't help yellow teeth. Well.
Never understand why homeless people smell of piss when you can literally piss anywhere.
I was enjoying a latte when I saw a hobo girl across the street. I almost vomited. Get back on your side of the bridge, no one likes you.
I hate seeing homeless people standing in the cold, shivering. Be glad when the light turns green. Well, that'll make it go away, won't it?
If home is where the heart is, then are homeless people heartless?
Wow.
Far from it.
Isn't that just gut-wrenching? And yet you think that's not uncommon. That's what a lot of people think about when they see someone standing on the corner, they see somebody under a bridge, they see someone that is dirty, that is wearing old clothes. Maybe they walk by them, they smell them, they don't smell good. And those are the thoughts that go through their mind. And individuals that are homeless and struggling with homelessness, they've become in so many ways the pariah in our community, right? They're lepers that are outcasts and they're marginalized. And it's the work of the rescue mission to change that. Change it for them individually and change that for our community. If you look on the screen, you'll see our mission statement, which is to share hope, end hunger and homelessness, change lives, strengthen communities one person at a time. So when people enter the rescue mission, say they're coming into emergency shelter, they didn't wake up that morning and say, hey, I can't wait to get to the mission. Something bad has happened in their life. A crisis has occurred, and they have nowhere else to turn. No family member, no friend that they can turn to. And because of that, they're coming to the mission. And often when they're walking in feeling like life, frankly, can't get much worse, and there's not a chance it's going to get any better. And at that point in time, we have this amazing opportunity to come alongside of them and share hope. And we share the hope that just because you're homeless, just because you're unemployed, or you're struggling with a mental or physical health issue, or you're struggling with an addiction issue, or you're out of relationship with your family and friends, just because those things are factors in your life right now, they do not define who you are, and more importantly, who you can become and who God has intended for you to become. That is the hope that we get to share, that there is a God that loves them passionately and unconditionally and wants to know them personally. We talk about ending hunger and homelessness, and we are sold out to those things. We believe we can end homelessness for people in this community. And I'll share a little bit about how we do that. But when we see people coming off the street and into shelter, and then we get them out of shelter and into their own house, and they're moving in and they're waving their keys, and they're opening up the door to their apartment or to their home, and they're walking in, and they've got a home, just like you and I have a home, we know that we're changing a life. And housing doesn't solve everything, but it is a great place to start. And from there, we can support them and encourage them. And from there, they can stabilize and they can build up their income and they can work towards their employment. And over time, their life starts to change. And we know that with every changed life, we've strengthened the community. And so that's the mission of the mission in a nutshell. And I want to share with you today kind of how we do that and how you can get involved. Because I know that you've been working through this series of your DNA as a church and how part of that is being a missionary. And I hope to inspire you by the end of this time together that you can come and be a missionary at the Rescue Mission. We need you to do that. We want you to do that in a place that would excite you and encourage you out of your gifting. So I'm working towards that end today, okay? That's what I want to do. So I want to talk a little bit about our programming, how we do what we do. We operate rescue missions in four different cities now. The main one that you all know is the Syracuse Rescue Mission downtown, 129 years old, one of the largest and oldest rescue missions in the country. But we also operate rescue missions in Auburn and Binghamton and Ithaca, working with homeless men, homeless families, homeless women, and seeing life transform and change through the work of God in those works and ministries there. We start, though, here in Syracuse with outreach. And if you look, you'll see some of what we do reaching out to the community. 7 days a week, we have street outreach team members out under bridges, looking in encampments, trying to find individuals that living, frankly, in places unfit for human habitat, like those shanties that you see behind me. That happens here in Syracuse, New York. People are living in these situations in Syracuse, New York, and all across the country, and it doesn't have to be that way. So our outreach is about connecting with them, meeting basic needs where they are, but then building trust and rapport, offering services to see if we can get them off the street as a place to start, and on their path towards recovering from homelessness and getting into housing. The other thing that we do is a large clothing outreach program. We'll give away over 100,000 articles of clothing to anybody that needs it. So if you're a family on the Near West Side, your parents want to make sure that your kids have clothing to wear to school, you can come to the Rescue Mission. If you're a homeless individual, you can come to the Rescue Mission. We will make sure that you have clothing. Many of you know our 14 stores throughout the communities, and that helps raise revenue for the Rescue Mission programs. But a number one thing we do is give clothing away for free. We got it for free, so we figured we want to give it away for free and help people make sure they have what they need. The other big ministry that we're known for in the community is our meal program. And every year, we serve about 250,000 meals to hungry men, women, and children in our community. We provide three meals a day, 365 days a year. Think about that for a second. There is a need in this community that means that we have to provide over 250,000 meals. That's mind-boggling, isn't it? And we could not do that if it was not for our volunteers, and I'll share a little bit more about what that looks like down the road. The other thing that we do is emergency shelter. We operate the largest emergency shelter in Syracuse. We just opened up this facility in October, and already we've been over capacity. Now let me kind of help you understand what that looks like. We went from a 132-bed facility that was almost always full. We added 50 more beds and made a 183-bed facility. And already during this cold stretch that we've been in, we've exceeded 190 people in our emergency shelter. We've also opened our doors during that time to women for the first time in our history for emergency shelter. And we now operate the largest shelter for women in this community. And every night we'll have between 40 and 45 women that have nowhere else to turn. So they're coming to the Rescue Mission. While they're there, they have access in our day center, in our shelter, to different services from healthcare to employment and education to fitness to case management, access to the internet so they can get online, look for jobs, connect with family members, whatever it is. All towards trying to move people through this continuum of services to get them into housing. We operate a couple of long-term housing programs. We do an affordable housing program that's permanent housing for homeless individuals. And then on top of that, we have an adult home, a licensed adult home through the state, where we've got 59 men in reses. These are men with disabilities that have pretty much outgrown their ability or their family's ability to care for them. And so they move into the mission, into the adult home. And between 10 and 20% of those residents were homeless at one point in time, came through the shelter, and our staff realized, man, they qualify to get into Crossroads. We need to get them in there, stabilize them. And you start to see the change that happens when someone can move out of crisis, stabilize, and you start to see their personalities, who God has intended for this individual to be, blossom and come out. And it's really wonderful and amazing to see. And our longest tenured resident in our adult home has been there over 30 years. Volunteers every day in our accounting wing. He's got his accounting degree, and he lives at Crossroads, been there, and does the check runs. We see him, he's a mainstay at the mission. We also do workforce development programs, and we've got Willing to Work, which is a transitional housing program, because people, the best thing you can do is help them find a job in order to stabilize and be able to provide for themselves and their families. And so we provide them with helping develop those job skills. Many of them have spotty history, right, in terms of work experience. So we try to fill those gaps in, mentor them, and be able to move them forward. And you can see the 2015 impact of the Rescue Mission in the four different cities combined. You'll see that we've been pretty busy. Over 302,000 meals served, 127,000 overnight stays, 744 permanent housing placements in four cities. That is something that rivals national outcomes. And it says that 744 men, women, and children are not going to be homeless tonight. They have a place that they can call home just like you and I. Isn't that amazing? They're not under a bridge. They're not in a camp in a tent somewhere. They're not in an abandoned trailer with no electricity, no running water. They have a place to call home. Life is starting to change. On top of that, we were able to get 250 people employment because they're starting to move through the work progress. And then we served over 11,000 individuals. And we do that with the support of amazing volunteers, over 3,500 volunteers that contribute over 108,000 hours to the Rescue Mission. So we are an extension of you. We're an extension of the church that cares about people. We're an extension of God's grace and love and mercy. And we are an extension that life can be better. And we share that. I'd like to share with you now a story of Rodney, and I'm going to cue that up on the video here so you can watch how the mission has been helping him at a crisis point in his life.
When it's cold outside, I begin to reflect on how I was when I was out there in the streets, freezing to death, nowhere to go, couldn't find a shelter to go to. I had to sleep under a bridge or an abandoned house or a train station. My name is Rodney Franklin. I originate from Colonia, New Jersey in Woodbridge Township. I graduated Colonia High School in June of 89. From then on, I graduated Seton Hall University. I have a Bachelor of Arts in Communication, minor in Spanish. After that, I went on and was called into ministry. And from then on, I that same year of September, I went on to Princeton Theological Seminary, and I studied there for 3 years, received a Master of Divinity degree. And my last year of seminary, I met a woman at the church I was interning at as a youth pastor, and I married her February of 97, that same year I graduated. Yeah, I went on to become a youth pastor at the church that where I met her at. As far as a regular job, I worked as an academic advisor at a four-year college institution and adjunct professor teaching communication and religion. So my life was quite busy at the time, especially with the family part, that's most important. So everything was going so well at that time. And all of a sudden I was laid off my job at the college, and I turned to alcohol and later to crack cocaine addiction. And that's where everything started going into a slow but yet downward spiral. That I lost pretty much everything a person could lose. I lost family. I lost close friends. I lost the basic needs of food, clothing, and shelter. I lost hope. Rehab after rehab, short-term rehab, the long-term rehab, the Christian rehab, to a homeless shelter in different cities of the country. I came to the rescue mission in the fall of last year, and I came there with just one outfit for the thousandth time. And for the thousandth time, they gave me multiple amount of outfits. For the thousandth time, they gave me food and clothing and shelter. They were beautiful to me. Now, thanks to the rescue mission and the people God has put in my life, my future is very bright. I'm seeking employment. And hoping I can give back to the community what God has given back to me. And for those who are helping the rescue mission, I just want to tell you specifically and personally, thank you. Thank you for not giving up on us. You may see many, when you see people walking up and down the street, don't give up on them. If they look dirty, if they're smelly, don't give up on them. If they're sleeping under a bridge, don't give up on them, because somebody didn't give up on me.
So when you see that individual standing on the corner holding a sign, or you see them walking down the street, they have a story. No one would have guessed by looking at Rodney that he had a divinity degree when he was homeless, right? Nobody would have guessed that he was a professor in a past life or that he had a family. Everybody has a story. And I think it's important for us that when we see individuals that don't necessarily look like us, clearly they might have some struggles. Remember, we don't understand the crisis or the trauma that has happened in their life to bring them to this point. We don't know what that story entails. And so before we judge, we need to think about, gosh, like, what can I do to help this individual? And be careful that we don't write a story that doesn't exist for them right now. The other point is that the events that cause homelessness can happen to anyone. You could lose a job. You could have a catastrophic health incident or injury take place in your life. You can have relational dysfunction happen in your family. These things can happen, and they can snowball and cause other challenges like addiction and continued mental illness and all sorts of things that can derail you and put you in a really bad place. And so it's important that we understand these events are universal. And how do we then, what do we do as a result of that? How do we engage people with that in mind? The other thing I want to share is that the loss of hope is devastating. Think about this. You heard him. He talked about losing family, losing friends, losing his housing and job, but he lost hope. At the end, he lost hope. These people that we serve often are just feeling it doesn't matter. No one cares. And yet at the same time, you saw the spark in his eye, right? The power of hope. When they start to see and they start to believe that they can have a better future, that things actually can work out for them. And that hope, that's contagious. And the cool thing is, we get to share that hope with them. The last thing I would share is that don't give up on them. You heard his plea, don't give up on us. You know, often, you know, it may start out that there's setbacks along the way, so we start taking steps of progress only to, you know, take a couple steps back and have to start over. But it's important that we don't lose faith and that we don't give up on them. It can be messy when you're dealing with people struggling with addiction or that are struggling with mental illness that's undiagnosed, or you're struggling with people that have only known crisis and trauma, and in some situations, violence. It can be a very, very messy situation. Stephen Fitzgerald, who works in our shelter, in our day center, will tell you that firsthand. The things that he sees, the things that he hears, they are ugly at times. It is incredibly messy. It's funny because I'm out at times in the community, I'll be out, and I think sometimes people think I'm a pastor or something, so once in a while, someone will drop an F-bomb, and then they'll look at me and they'll be like, oh, I'm sorry. And I'm like, do you realize how many F-bombs I hear in a given day where I work? It is a different world, and people that are coming out of crisis have only known to try to survive. Just the other day, we had our sheriff's deputies in, and they went through the shelter, and they were inspecting the different lockers, and at the end, there was this table that they had of all the different makeshift weapons and rocks and things that were there. There was also a couple crack pipes that were there, and this is the challenges that face the people that they live in, that they feel they've got to have these makeshift weapons because they're out on the street, and their lives are literally in jeopardy at times. It is a messy work. But in the midst of that mess, we are reminded that we have a God that came to rescue. And he loves them particularly. To remind us of that, I just would look at Luke 4. And this is the passage where he goes into the synagogue at his hometown and they hand him the scroll and he picks it up. And this is what he selects to read. The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to release the oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Isn't that amazing? Think about the power of that. Release the oppressed, freedom, healing for the sick. Jesus is saying, these are my people and they matter in my kingdom. And in the year of the Lord's favor, God is saying that the redemptive work that he had in mind for mankind is made perfect through the work of Jesus in his fullness and in his presence. And we get to carry that on. But oftentimes, I think what happens is sometimes we struggle with our own judgment, right? Because we see people who maybe are caught up in addiction or maybe they're a prisoner because of crimes that they've committed, and we think, well, they deserve what they get. They made these choices. They should live with them. And yet Christ is saying right here, he's saying they are included too. So whether you are on the margins because of circumstances that have happened to you through illness or through injury or whatever it might be, or whether you have made bad decisions in your life, and we have all made bad decisions in our life, and those have caused us to be marginalized in some way, shape, or form, it doesn't matter. He's either way, I love you and you're in my kingdom. So what does that mean for us? What are we supposed to do with that? Well, Christ again reminds us in Matthew 25 what we're supposed to do when he's talking about the sheep and the goats. He says this, then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance. The kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? And the king will reply, I tell you the truth, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me. And so by serving these individuals caught up in homelessness and in poverty and on the margins, we are serving Christ in person. We have this amazing opportunity to serve his family, people that he loves dearly, that he died for. And so as we're processing through that, I think, well, what does that mean for the folks here at North Central? How can you get involved? And I want to walk through just some very practical ways that you can do that. Okay, on the slides, we're going to go through a couple things, just demonstrations of how people have volunteered, gotten involved, and become essentially missionaries at the Rescue Mission. The first is in our food service center. As I mentioned, 250,000 meals, 3 meals a day, 365 days a year. We could not do it without our volunteers. So many of our meals are served by volunteers daily at the Rescue Mission. So you could come in and serve a meal and just be hope, be light, be salt for people. Recently, during one of our holiday meals, we had a woman that came through. Her name is Stacy, and Stacy's a veteran, and here she was serving meals that day. I think this was for Thanksgiving, and she comes upon another veteran, and she takes a moment and just to let him know that he matters, looked him in the eye, had a conversation. The beautiful thing is she didn't see him as a homeless person. She saw him as someone that had served our country, and because she had done that, she had an extra connection with him. And had she not been there, that would never have taken place. So much of this is about just showing up and being present and seeing how God just might use you. I mentioned earlier that we do a lot of street outreach, and we could use volunteers who are willing to go into some dark places with our outreach team and look for people that are in need, that are sleeping and living in conditions that are simply unfit for human habitation. Last week, we did the point in time count, and 7 teams went out of the community to try to find people that were living on the street so that we could know how many are out there, but then ultimately so we can figure out how to get services to them and get them off the street. One of these individuals that we've been successful in getting off the street, his name is Jesse. After 9.5 years of living on the street, because our outreach team engaged with him, we were able to get him into housing just recently. So it can happen. So however you volunteer, if you want to volunteer with outreach, we'll put you to use. But we also, as I mentioned earlier, are working a lot with women. And we had these 2 women that had this great idea that, well, you've got 40 women in your shelter, and a lot of them are struggling with crisis issues. You know what? Why don't we do this thing where we just get together and we just make crafts and we create things? And so these women gathered and they just had a great time together. And they were no longer homeless. They were a craft group. And they were just creating things and having conversation. And with that comes healing and transformation. One of the women here, Janae, she's a woman that's been staying in our shelter. She moved out of the shelter into her own apartment this month in January. She's working, found a job. She was actually working 3 jobs at one point in time, got down to 1 stable job, and is enrolled in Cayuga Community College and is about to study criminal justice. So life transformation can happen when you just show up. Other events that we do a lot of awareness events and fundraising events in the community. We just had the Freeze Out 5K last Friday up at OCC. But we do Ride and Run for the Rescue is coming up in June. And you could participate in that. You could put a team in and you could ride or run. You could come out and you could volunteer. But either way, you could help us raise awareness and funding that meets the needs of individuals that we serve. We have a great program called Jobs for Life. This is a partnership with a local church called Missio, as well as businesses in the community, Bible-based curriculum on building job skills. The individuals go through this, and they're matched up with a mentor in the community, in the business world. And that person coaches them through the process of finding employment and holding on to that job. And this guy is Brian. Brian met his mentor by accident. He got an invite to go to church. He sat beside this guy, got to know him, didn't realize that this gentleman, because he volunteers at the mission with Jobs for Life, would be his mentor. And ended up connecting, building a relationship, and Brian's doing well in the workforce today. Or maybe you choose, hey, I've got some real high-level skill sets, and I want to get involved in planning and organization with the Rescue Mission on a committee. Got tons of committees, and we got our board of directors, and there's ways that you can take your talents and your skills and your expertise and help us as we move this mission forward. One of our board members, Chris Gardner, says this has been a life-changing experience for him. Over the past 7 years, being involved in the rescue mission has completely changed the way that I view myself in the world, and for that, I am forever grateful. Chris says something that we have come to believe is true, that when you volunteer, when you get engaged, when you serve, not only do you change somebody else's life, your life changes. And if you hang out with us long enough, you get to come to this thing called the Hope Awards. And the Hope Awards happens in November, and it's an opportunity for us to celebrate the achievements of the men, women, and children that we serve, that have come through our programs, that have worked incredibly hard to get their life on track, and they've achieved some levels of success, and we celebrate that. We throw a big dinner for them. We acknowledge them. We give them these great awards called the Hope Award. And it is amazing because you see the impact that all of our volunteers, all of our staff, everyone working together in this community has had on the life of this individual. And to give you just a little taste of that, I want you to see just some raw footage from the event.
Okay, do you want me to read it?
Yeah.
Okay. Ronnie's just asked me to assist him. And first of all, I just got to say, so Ronnie, I come in every day, and Ronnie is literally out there power washing every entranceway at the rescue mission. And then he turns to me and says, hey, boss, is there anything else I can do? And I'm like, no, I mean, look at what you're doing. So Ronnie, it is amazing what you do. Thank you so much. I, Ronnie Mitchell, want to thank everybody, Mr. Gary Mann and Nicole Mann, and Mike at Cayuga Center. All staff members there, women's and men, and Mr. Scott, and my boss, Mr. Tom, that work here at the 155 Gifford Street building downtown, helping me and allowed me and securing so I could work. Thank you. Ms. Debbie, thank you for everything constantly, and Ms. Amber for everything constantly. And that, a few more. We also want to thank Lori, Belinda, Glenna, Mary, Davia, Gina, and Jackie, as well as Kendall. And you can see by this list that Ronnie is involved, right? So give him a hand. Thank you so very much.
All right, thank you very much.
I really don't deserve this because my wife has been through a lot this past year. And I want to give this to her. Because to have your baby boy bedridden at 24 and I never really seen her cry, but maybe twice, but I'm sure she has. She really deserves this because she stayed motivated and encouraged. And I want to just give this to her and my son.
To thank my father, my only father that I had, and that's God in my life. I've been through a lot in the past 5 years with my real family, my adoptive family. I've been down the dark road through drinking and fighting for my life. I would like to thank Gary, my best friend, and Chance, Matt, like most of the rescue mission staff. They brought me love. They showed me what love really is, because I never had it. But No matter what I went through, no matter what I've done, I'm going to be there for the young ladies and men that go through the things that I used to go through and help them with their life and tell them that it's going to be okay and to believe in God and have God in your heart. Thank you, guys.
Think about the power of that. Did you hear the names that people were thanking? A lot of those individuals, I mean, they didn't do anything heroic. They just showed up. They just acknowledged that these are human beings that have value in God's eyes, and then they did their piece of it, right? Our vision statement at the Rescue Mission is to be a catalyst for unimaginable life change. If you get involved with the mission, you are going to make stories like what you just saw come true. You're going to help life change happen in unimaginable ways. This came home to me for real. I was reminded of this recently at the Hope Awards. So about a year ago, I was out on the street and I was talking to an individual named Glenn. And I try to do that anytime that I see an individual that's out and I drive up next to him or I'm walking down. I'll try to get to know a little bit about their story. And I talked to Glenn and I walked away from my conversation with Glenn a little discouraged and lamenting and thinking, oh my gosh, what's it going to take to get Glenn off the street? Does the community have a response that he'll work with? Does the organization have a response that he'll work with? And I just was scratching my head. I read a blog post about it. And I just was really concerned. And I didn't see Glenn ever again until the Hope Award, when his name was called out and he came up onto the stage and he said to me, he's like, do you recognize me? You talked to me when I was on a corner. That's all I did. I didn't do anything after that. My role there stopped. Glenn connected with the mission's outreach team, and his life changed and transformed, and he went from being a heroin addict on the street to being in recovery in his own place. And we were celebrating that changed life. This can happen. We can end hunger and homelessness for people here in Central New York. So I ask you to get involved with us. Take that missionary fire and really come to serve. And I guarantee you that in the process, not only will you change a life forever, your life will be changed forever. Thank you so very much.